Welcome to Crypto Nights, where we help you finally make sense of the trending world of cryptocurrencies. So gather your virtual piggy bank and let's get started.
Matthew, welcome to Crypto Nights. We are excited to have you as a guest speaker on our podcast today.
Thank you very much, Kandi. It's a pleasure to be here, and I'm excited to be on your show.
Wonderful. As I told you, I've been digging up on Quantumari, reading up about you, your background, and your project, and the size and the scope and the impact is very exciting. So I'm very excited that our listeners will have a fantastic episode ahead. So can you please kick it off by, Matthew, you giving us a little bit about your background? Where have you been before? What led you to this spot?
Yeah, absolutely. We don't go back too many years because, you know, one doesn't want to lose listeners. Let's not make this a long story, but let's go back sort of, you know, 3 or 4 years. And so I'm originally from the UK. I came over here to Southern California 4 years ago. And one of the things that excited me more than anything was the Jobs Act. And the Jobs Act, which had only then been enacted, it stands for the Jumpstart Our Business Start, put in place by Barack Obama. But what it did is it updated securities laws that really hadn't been changed since the 1930s. And what those laws were designed to do, and it was also known as the sort of the crowdfunding act, but it really kickstarted the process of companies being able to raise money from the crowd. And so back then, that was the time that a number of crowdfunding platforms were able to start raising money for equity rather than for products. So you've got Indiegogo and Kickstarter on this side who are raising money for products. But there was a whole range of companies began to develop, particularly in the real estate space. Companies like Realty Mogul and Realty Shares and CrowdStreet, they all came out of the Jobs Act. That was really exciting. So I set up a company called Crowd Venture, which was a real estate crowdfunding platform that used some of these changes in legislation to be able to raise money from the crowd to invest in real estate. And some of the benefits there was that you no longer needed to be a member of the country club. You could invest small amounts of money. The real issue was there was still, even with this change in legislation and even with the technology that we had, still there was a lot of friction. Still wasn't terribly easy to be able to come in and be an investor. There was a lot of sort of legislative red tape, and there's a lot of friction from a technology perspective. And so over the last 3 or 4 years, we built Crowd Venture. I launched two funds, both of them real estate debt funds, one of which was a Regulation A Plus fund. And that regulation is a halfway house between private placement and a full IPO. So that needs to be qualified by the SEC. So over the last 2 years, working very much hand-in-hand with the SEC and with FINRA, got a really good understanding of the whole securities world. And I remember going to a crowdfunding conference about, you know, 3 or 4 years ago, and one of the speakers there was Tim Draper. And so Tim Draper was talking about crowdfunding, and one of the things he mentioned was how excited he and his team are about blockchain. The seeds were sown about 3 or 4 years ago, but being rather slow on the uptake, unfortunately, it took me another 2 years to actually figure out what he was talking about. Because, you know, I'm sitting there in the audience and I Googled blockchain, and it said blockchain is a distributed ledger technology. And I thought I must have Googled the wrong blockchain or something, because I couldn't see what could possibly be interesting about a distributed ledger technology. So the whole concept of trust and, you know, immutability and decentralization was lost on me at that point. Fast forward a couple of years, having been subjected to significant amounts of fear of missing out by virtue of going to cryptocurrency conferences where in the duration of the conference, people had become millionaires just because they'd held Bitcoin, and the growth over that two-day period was so significant. So I was sort of thinking, well, there must be a way. And it was this real seed of a thought. It was about a year ago. How do we buying blockchain, how do we combine cryptocurrencies with real estate? There must be some sort of connection. So a very long answer to your very short question. I'm really sorry about this, but that's kind of a brief background and sort of segueing into how we got involved with sort of morphing from real estate crowdfunding into blockchain. And then this real moment of like, you know, aha, there really is something here. We can take real estate aspect. It's a way that we can actually turn something that is illiquid and make it liquid. So it's this sort of crowdfunding on steroids, you know, moment that really made me sort of sit up and think we've potentially got something there.
So let's frame it as the market that has some unresolved pain, for the lack of a better word, that Quantumari intends to resolve. So if we put it that way, because there has been Jobs Act, there have been, like you said, maybe Fundrise or Realty Shares or Realty Mobile. So there are n number of crowdfunded realties that came on right after Jobs Act. And many of them are pretty good. But then you realize that that was good, but not good enough. So between the good and good enough, there is some degree of pain that is still being experienced in the market that you feel that real estate plus blockchain can resolve. What exactly is that extra pain that is still out there? What are people still looking for beyond what was enabled by the Jobs Act?
Secondary market and trading liquidity. So if you look at the existing crowdfunding mechanisms, what they provide is access for investors to buy into real estate projects. It's a one-way valve. So in other words, you buy into the project. These are individual projects, or you can buy into funds. But if you're buying into an individual project, then you are restricted by the Securities Act. So you have to hold that asset for a minimum of 12 months. And the question then is, once your lockout period has expired, there is no secondary market, because what's happening is you're buying an interest in a house or in a single real estate development that doesn't have a mass market appeal for a secondary market. So the first issue is that the investments that are made are being made into individual real estate entities or individual real estate investments, and there's no tradability of your interest. There are some platforms out there that enable you technically to be able to list your asset on a buyer-seller matching basis. They're not proper exchanges. But again, the issue there is that everybody has a very esoteric asset. So for me to be able to buy your shares, I need to understand the characteristics of the asset that you're buying. So the way that we're solving that is to say, and you talk about market pain, one of the other real issues in the market is most people do not understand or cannot articulate the fundamentals behind the usage case for cryptocurrencies like Bitcoin. In other words, pure cryptocurrencies that are not smart contract driven. Tell me why there is value in that. And there are all sorts of answers, network effects, usage case, but it's very difficult for people specifically to identify why this coin has the value that it has. And now with real estate, it's easy to value a piece of real estate because it's in a marketplace and there are comparatives, there's a historical pricing, and there are commentators who will give you prediction of where that pricing is likely to go. So there are fundamentals behind real estate as an asset class, and that is entirely different. But we're talking about pain, remember. The biggest pain that crypto investors have is the unpredictability of the tokens that they have. So if you are making large purchases in a cryptocurrency, you run the risk that value that you receive from cryptocurrency for the exchange of the services or goods that you provide, your value that you receive may diminish overnight, and it may diminish significantly. So there is an issue there, and there is a requirement, therefore, for that to be resolved. So the way that we're resolving that is combining these two things. So if we take the efficiencies that blockchain and cryptocurrencies provide us, and we back those cryptocurrencies and say that you have the currency element of it, which is the ability for it to be traded from person or moved seamlessly from wallet to wallet and person to person. If you take that, but then back the value of that real estate token by something physical in the real world that's measurable, then that should make the utility of that currency, just to mix my metaphors nicely there, that utility should be better because it's backed by something that is reliable. So the pain in the marketplace is if there's no secondary market for real estate, we solve that by having a token that can be traded in securities exchanges, the new ATS platforms that are being built. We also solve the problem of having a cryptocurrency that doesn't have a defined measurable value. And then if you can then have a currency that has this sort of backstop value, then there's a potential for it to be used as an exchange of value because we know much more what the likely minimum value is going to be.
Wow. So let me summarize. So there are two things we are looking at, which is providing liquidity to an illiquid market. So that is an extra on top of these crowdfunded real estate businesses. And then the second one was a bit of a surprise for me, is what you're saying is a Bitcoin or an Ether, which may or may not have a solid underlying asset with predictable value, have very high volatility. But when you're backing this up with a real estate asset, real estate is something that we have been familiar with for a very long time. We have data analytics strong enough to help us realize what is the value fairly accurately. So you're taking some of the unpredictability out of the tokens, and then you're adding some of the liquidity into real estate. Did I get that right?
Yes. No, that is precisely what it is. So it's actually a very simple concept. I mean, you know, it's actually rather difficult to deliver in practice, but you know, there are technological challenges, there are regulatory challenges, and you know, but these are challenges; they're not impossibilities. But if you think, then the third thing is, well, let's say that we can do all this. What are the benefits of the real estate owner? So we know that we know what the benefits are to the crypto holders because they have a currency, a cryptocurrency that is more reliable, less likely to fluctuate, less volatility. So therefore, it's more has more utility as the currency because it is more predictable, and predictability is critical there. Let's talk about the asset class. One of the biggest problems that homeowners have in the United States and around many parts of the world is when you start paying down your mortgage, you start owning part of your house outright. And we know that that's called the equity that you have in your home. So over a period of years, as you pay down the debt, the equity that you build up can be significant, several hundred thousand dollars. Unfortunately, that is an asset that is the only liquidity event currently that you can have with your home is when you sell your home in its entirety. So that equity that you built up is locked up in your house until you sell your house. And the only way to create liquidity on that right now is to borrow again. So as a homeowner, you own this asset. It's your asset, but you can't access it because of the illiquidity that you have in your home. And if you're not in a position to borrow more money, either you can't afford it, you don't want to, or you simply don't pass the credit checks that the banks are imposing, you're sitting on an asset which is of significant, potentially life-changing value, but you're unable to release it. So what our platform does, and the team that we have already been very active in shared equity or equity relief. So if you take equity relief as the asset class, and there's $32 trillion worth of single family owner occupied homes in the United States. And our research shows that around $9 million of that is equity that's owned by the people, not leveraged by the banks. So there's trillions of dollars literally of value that is locked up in people's homes. So what we're able to do is say, we will buy a percentage of the value of your home. And remember, we've done almost $250 million worth of this historically in an analog world. Then what we'll do is we will take that asset, put it into a mechanism that allows it to be tokenized, where each token represents effectively a pool of these assets. So the token is not representative of one person's home. The token that we're creating is a representation of a pool of assets. And that token can then rely on that pool of assets, which we can audit. And we can publish audited results. We can publish a net asset value every month or every quarter. And so the benefit is to the potentially millions of homeowners who want to release some of the value that's locked up by raising capital through the sale of these asset-backed tokens, those homeowners can benefit, can have capital that's theirs, that they can do with as they wish without having to pay interest rates or monthly payments be afraid that there could be some foreclosure if they don't meet their obligation.
So technically, what Quantum RE intends to do is sell tokens, raise money, and then use that money to buy into these fractional real estate. And then when those homeowners eventually exit, they will that extra will be encashed by Quantum RE and somehow return back to the system, but all along the tokens are liquid and they can be traded because you're constantly publishing the underlying asset value.
Yeah, so what you have, that's exactly right. So you have two distinct universes. You have the asset universe and you have the token universe. The token universe is a representation of the asset universe. So as people sell their home, and part of our contract with the homeowner is that we share in a percentage of the increase in value of the home. So the way that we make money is we will buy a percentage of your home at a fixed rate. If your house goes up in value, then a percentage of that increase in value is paid to us as our profit share. That also means if the house goes down in value, we run a risk of having a limited or no return on our investment. But that's the nature of the partnership with the homeowner. So as money comes back into the pool and the profit goes back into the pool, it increases the net asset value, which means there should be a correlation with an increase in the overall value of the token. So everybody can see what the value of this pool is. We won't dilute the number of tokens, so we won't do the equivalent of quantitative easing. So there won't be any, the only time we'll issue a new token is when we have new assets in the fund. There's always going to be that one-to-one relationship.
That's fantastic. Now, is the process of assessing, finding, investing into these fractional real estate, is that decentralized or is that centralized? Meaning, do you and your management and operational team do that, or is that also decentralized?
It has to start off as a centralized model. And the reason for that is that the experience in underwriting is held within a group of individuals who have specific experience in that space. So to start the process, the optimal way of starting this process is to leverage our underwriting experience in this asset class to make sure that the assets that are brought into the fund meet underwriting criteria. And that's a safety mechanism to make sure that we strip out any potential fraud. And also, we want to make sure that the assets that are in the fund are performing assets. So because the critical nature of the asset-backed token is to make sure that the assets are performing. So stage one really is to make sure, is to create the mechanism. So we use a form of artificial intelligence. In other words, our human experience. So what we do is we will build this sort of mechanism that allows us to understand based on our experience to build an underwriting engine. And I think at that point, over time, we will then be able to develop an automated origination mechanism that will then allow us to distribute those technologies so that the overall underwriting process becomes decentralized. It's a migration path. We build the systems, we test the systems, we allow the systems to grow and to learn. And then at that point, it becomes decentralized, it becomes self-sustaining.
Got it. So you had to define a safe starting point to enable you to learn and grow, and in the process, nail down the processes and automate them to a point where you can decentralize the whole thing eventually.
Yeah, that's absolutely right, because otherwise there's going to be too much learning from the outset and there are too many unknowns. What are the areas where we know where the edges are? And we know that there is, if we underwrite these houses through traditional mechanisms, we know we can build an asset pool. We know we can tokenize it. We know we can learn from those results. And we know that the more assets and the more performance and the more history we have, we can leverage that data. And then we can become more predictive in terms of how we operate.
Got it. I think I get the idea. So the kind of people that should be interested in this are people who have significant amount of equity that's locked up in their real estate, and they want to turn that into liquid cash. Those are the people that would come to you potentially. And then there would be people that want to own a token into that fractional real estate that potentially will appreciate in value. In some sense, a reflection of the trust they have in your abilities to pick the right kind of real estate at the right value. Is that more or less what it is?
It is, exactly. But the other critical element is transparency. So every single, and part of the usage that we have of the blockchain is, apart from the tokenization of these assets, is as an investor or as somebody who is a token holder, even if you hold $5 worth of tokens, you have the ability to look at each and every one of those properties and those real estate assets that make up the pool. And you can dive into a very deep level of transparency as to where the assets are, what they are, how much of the asset, how we maintain it, how we service it, what the history is, what the performance has been historically, what performance we think is likely to be in the future. And these are broken down. If you imagine a map, you'll be able to see on a map where the houses are, what the assets are, and you'll be able to zoom in and actually see this house in Malibu, for example. You'll be able to see details of the house and in some cases pictures and other images and other information. So going forward, you will then be able to come in as a different type of member. So rather than buying this asset-backed token, and this is our key, you will be able to build your own portfolio of these assets. So you may say, as an investor, I like the idea of this mutual fund style token. But what about if I wanted to pick and choose some of my own investments? The platform will allow you to do that as well. So going back to the crowdfunding mechanism, where the good thing about crowdfunding is you can pick the house that you invest in. The bad thing is that there's no secondary market. So we solve that problem by saying, look at all of these houses that we have in our funds that have been tokenized. Would you like to buy a piece of some of these houses. So our platform will allow you to go in and literally buy fractions of these assets and build your own portfolio. And within our internal exchange, you will be able to trade those real estate asset classes with other people, and you will then be able to convert those real estate assets into currency that you can use in the outside world.
Got it. So this is very exciting. So because I was trying to study and understand, because if you simply Google for real estate on blockchain, you get plenty of results, and there were many companies that showed up. But the idea that you are focusing on is fractional ownership and providing predictability to the value of tokens, total transparency of what to invest in, a choice of either investing in this mutual fund of real estate, so to speak, or in picking a particular asset to invest in. Is that a good summary?
Exactly right. But the other thing is, if you imagine this mutual fund as being an inch deep and a mile wide, so in other words, it's not a traditional fund where you're investing in the fund. And that's where the sea change is going to be, because as an investor, there are many other real estate investments that are more interesting, maybe higher risk. But if you're just purely a US dollar investor and you want to invest in real estate, there's a whole bunch of, you know, mutual funds, real estate investment funds. But the difference is, the real value here is that we're creating a token that has all of the benefits that a token has, being able to use that token to pay for service. But it's a token that may appreciate as opposed to being static. So if you're paid in dollars, for example, or if you're paid in some other currency, the value of your salary or your payment does not normally increase because it's a static currency. So the real interesting thing of what we're building is, yes, there is an investment opportunity if you buy the token because it may appreciate based on the appreciation of the underlying asset. But the critical thing is this sort of brave new world where it's got one foot in the securities camp and one foot in the currency camp. So it's half security and half currency. And so the currency element of it is, that's where it's exciting, because people trust it more than they trust some of the other currencies. Then the investment side of it becomes irrelevant, because this is much more useful, because I'm going to go and buy my stuff. Or I want to get paid in the quantum token. I don't want to get paid in dollars. I don't want to get paid in Bitcoin. I want to be paid in quantum because I know it's going to be fairly solid. So that's half investment, half security, half currency, half security. It's I know too many halves there. Sorry.
No, I get it though. It's interesting because we have used different kinds of backing, right? We have backed currencies with gold. We have backed currencies like Tether with the US dollar. And here you're saying there is a interesting confluence of technology, outstanding pain points in the market. And oh, by the way, in the process of doing this, we have backed up this currency with the real estate, which is real assets are backing these up. And therefore, there can be in some sense, either a stable currency or a deterministic value behind each of these. And therefore, it can be a valuable currency for you to use vis-a-vis maybe a Bitcoin or an Ethereum.
And that's absolutely right. And the other benefit, remember, is that with the gold standard, if we turn the clock back a few years, the gold standard was something that people understood, even though they were not directly participating, because the average person does not have a stash of gold. However, the average person does own a house. So in other words, what we're doing here is saying that the real benefit is that we're using these esoteric blockchain technologies, and we're talking about liquidity and securities and currencies, and all of that is mumbo jumbo to the average guy in the street. But if we say the benefit of all of this confluence of technology and regulation and market is we're able to buy something that is yours, give you value for it at the current market price, and then maybe come back to you in a few months and say, would you like to sell us some more? So there's a real social benefit, because we're taking this marketplace, and it becomes relevant to people that otherwise would have no interest or no exposure to blockchain. So the ability for us to say, we can release $100,000 in your home to a senior who has no income or limited income and no prospect of borrowing money and really doesn't want to get involved in reverse mortgages or other, you know, potentially predatory style lending. This is a real opportunity for them. So, you know, that is the word, you know, life changing is fairly sort of hyperbolic, but to be able to say to someone, we can release value, there's no debt, and we can write you a check now and you can do whatever you want with that money. And it's not going to grow. In other words, you know, your debt isn't going to increase and increase and increase. That's very important.
But as a matter of fact, you're saying there is no debt repayment. There is a fractional ownership. So when you sell it, we get a part of your upside.
Yeah, that's right. It's different. I mean, the important thing with debt is there whether the house goes up or down.
Yeah.
And that's the key differential. So, and again, commentators have said, yeah, hang on a second. You're saying there's no debt, but the guy's got to repay this when he sells the house. It's slightly different because in a debt situation, you own your house, but you owe money to the bank. If your house plummets in value, guess what? You still owe the money to the bank. The two are not correlated. The bank will be able to chase you for that debt. Now, if we have bought some of your house, you don't owe that to us. All that happens is when you sell your house, you have an obligation to make sure that you don't forget to pay us. So in other words, it's not you that owes us the money because it's the process. So the lien that we have on your home is really a performance lien that says we have a contract. You have to make sure that when this goes through escrow, the piece that we own, we get paid for. You don't pay us that. The buyer who buys the house pays that. And these aren't semantics. This is not us trying to sort of trip people up. It is critically not a debt. And the important thing there is if your house goes down in value, then we get paid less. So in other words, it's not like, you know, in a debt scenario, that doesn't change. So there is still an obligation for you to pay us a percentage of the increase in value. But again, that's not different because you only pay us if your house has gone up. And that's more like a partnership relationship than a debt relationship.
Oh, this is very exciting. As you were speaking, I was a bit concerned about you're doing something absolutely fantastic. However, to explain this, communicate it so that people can actually understand the degree of disruption that you're bringing to the table, I guess maybe I should be really excited that we put all of this into this podcast. This is going to be extremely valuable because this has some great content, Matthew. This is amazing.
Thanks. It's very kind. But you're right. But I think there are three sort of distinct audiences, and they don't have to all work together. So one, and again, this is a challenge for us because if we're trying to build all of this in one platform, you know, we've got to have three voices at the same time. So that, from our perspective, that's always a bit of a challenge. But if you're looking at it from a traditional homeowner's perspective, we will be able to speak to you in language that you understand. It says, look, you may not understand all this blockchain stuff, but you don't need to because we will write you a check for US dollars and you will sell us a piece of your home. Don't worry, we've done this before. We've originated, you know, tens of millions of dollars worth of these assets. So the questions that you're going to ask, lots of people have already asked them and here are the answers. It's been tested in courts in California. We have letters of no action and similar types of letters from the IRS. So in other words, we've been through this process and whatever your fears are or your questions are as a homeowner, don't worry. Someone's already asked that and here is the answer. And we've got loads of customers historically that can prove that. The next question then, if you are a token purchaser and you want to know about the asset base, you're a different person. You're going to have a different set of questions, but there'll be a different part of the platform that answers those. And thirdly, if you come in and want to buy fractional equity interest and build your own portfolio, you'll have a different way in. So this whole platform is driven and built as a membership platform. So in other words, you have different levels of membership and that gives you different levels of information. But you're right, it is this sort of confluence. It's the hub and the spokes are all these different areas. But each of those are problems that we're solving and all roads meet really to the simple concept of having an asset-backed token that people value that releases money so that we can go and buy, go and help people release the equity in their homes.
So if a house that you have fractional ownership in ends up selling and you've, let's say, made $30,000 of return on your investment, what do you do with the $30,000? Are you going to buy back some of your tokens and burn them? Do you reduce the supply? Or what happens to that 30 grand?
Remember, that's profit. So that goes back into the pool. So our pool of assets has now increased by $30,000. So what we haven't done is we haven't issued any new tokens. Because we've sold some assets, the value of that token should have increased. In the same way that if you own a share in a company and the company has a big contractual win and has more profit, the shares go up in value. So what we don't do is we haven't got any plans to buy back tokens. In fact, the opposite is we want to stimulate more token sales because more capital goes into the fund, fund increases. The important thing to understand is the direct relationship between the assets under management and the tokens that are issued. We cannot issue more tokens unless more capital goes into the fund. So in other words, if the value of the fund increases organically because of the asset increase, that does not allow us to create more tokens.
So let's assume that started off with the token price at 10 cents and a year from now, the token price is $1. And then you see a $1 million worth of investment that you want to make, then you will probably sell a million new tokens, but at the current market price per dollar, raise $1 million, which will go into the pot, so to speak, that can now again be investing. Did I get that process right?
That's it. That's exactly it. So we sell, so the value of the tokens goes up. And remember, it's not a volatile value. The question is, how come your tokens are worth a dollar now? Well, they're based on a dollar because we can prove that the net asset value of the fund on a per token basis is now a dollar. So we're selling you tokens at the net asset value of the fund.
There's also a positive danger. Positive danger is what you said earlier, that they look at it as an asset-based, asset-backed token. And if people start paying others salaries and other things using this currency, then the demand for your token might increase, and that might be another upward force that might pull up the price. So
that would only happen in the secondary market, though. So it wouldn't affect the price that we sell tokens at. But you're right. I mean, it could be a nice problem to have where there could be an arbitrage opportunity between the primary issuance, which is where we sell tokens, and the secondary market. But what tends to happen there's an analog in the sort of traditional securities world, where these types of shares normally trade at a slight premium or a slight discount to their NAV. Now, we believe that our tokens will probably trade at a slight premium to the NAV because of the liquidity that the tokens bring. But we'll see. I mean, that's one of the really interesting things. I mean, and frankly, we cannot predict how the market will treat the token. All we can do really is say, if we provide transparency, auditability, the ability for you to understand what the assets are backed by, that transparency creates more trust in this token. So that should help if there is going to be a premium, that would certainly help that.
Great. And I see a lot of other things that we can talk about. I'm assuming you're global, so you can be gathering data about real estate across the globe, and you'll be realizing, oh my God, these are all bright spots where the growth rates are in double digits per year, and these are slightly boring assets. We can do more of these. So I think you can always keep in step with time because you have huge amounts of data that you are actually tracking extremely regularly, and that can be monetizable for you because it's like internal great research, right? High grade research.
It is. And again, that's a very critical point because most, if not all, of the real estate information is historic information, and there is a significant lag. So when we buy real estate assets, we do an appraisal at that point. So what we do is we send somebody around to look at the house, do the comparatives in the local area, make sure that the asset that we're buying doesn't have anything that would cause it to become a non-performing asset. So what we're doing is we're getting real-time information about the value of these assets. And that is very valuable. So and every time we sell an asset, every time we increase the equity, we go through that process. So we're beginning to build valuable real-time information about an asset class that is very interesting to other investors around the world. So the value of the data that we're building is also a critical piece of the platform.
Wow. Our listeners who have listened until this point are very excited about what you're doing. And they want to know, what should they do next to stay engaged? When are you going to have your token sale? Where can they be engaged with you? And so on and so forth. Because this is kind of unique. This is reminding me of something like EOS, where it was a year-long token sale. And here you might say this is more of like an ongoing token sale. As and when real estate assets are found, you might sell more tokens to fund that project and then keep doing that as and when that happens, if I understood your model.
You're right, exactly. So the asset-backed token, and again, it's all subject to, we are intending to operate in a global manner, but Obviously, what we have to do is work very much in line with securities regulations. So that's the piece that we're concentrating on very much in terms of, you know, how do we make sure that we're working very much in compliance with what is uncharted territory. So that's one of the some of the processes we're working through. As far as the ICO is concerned, it is a membership platform. So we will be looking to offer tokens, sort of membership tokens. That will be offered outside of the US. Our plans are to deliver a minimum sort of sandbox style product within the next 4 to 6 weeks. So this will be something that will prove to people that we've built this. So we've actually been building this platform for the last 8 months, 9 months. And so very soon you will be able to go to quantum.one or quantumre.com, which both of those are the same site, and you'll be able to see the platform in a sandbox environment. You'll be able to kick the tires, as it were. And then, you know, look out for more news as to what we're going to be doing. But, you know, the fun begins in the next 6 weeks when we actually have a platform that you can see, you know, touch and feel. And that's the message, really. So, you know, if you have a moment, go to the website, put your name in the list, and we'll keep you updated with these exciting developments.
That's quantum.one, quantum.one, quantum.one. There is no U in quantum. So, yeah, Matthew, perfect. Thank you very much. Is there anything else that you want to tell the audiences? Maybe there is a question or two I was supposed to ask that I did not. Is there anything else you want
to? No, I mean, other than to say thank you for the opportunity. It's been fabulous talking to you, and I love the questions. And, you know, it is exciting, and we are all excited. Excited is a word, you know, that has sort of lost its meaning, but this really does feel like there is something very big that we are unlocking, and it won't just be us. I mean, if we're the first, or if we're part of that process that helps this sort of movement to create liquidity and freedom within these assets, then that's a great thing. But no, it's been fantastic talking to you, and I really enjoyed being on the show.
Matthew, I request you to contact us back once you have your MVP rolled out, and then once you have your first token sale going on. We want you to kind of come back and update our audiences. But meanwhile, we all at CryptoNights wish you the very best. And we request all of you listeners to head over to your iTunes or Google Play and rate us 5 stars if you like this episode. Thank you, Matthew.
Thank you. It's been great being on. Thanks again.
Thanks for listening to the Crypto Knights. Never miss an episode. Subscribe now at www.cryptonights.io.